And just, of course, to mention that, as everybody knows, remembering the first yahrzeit of Maya Noren's father, Rabbi Ozer Glickman, known to many as Tony, Harav Ozer Yeshayahu Ben Dov, I think for all of us, you know, it's a big nechama during the course of the last year that we get to look at Jordan's picture every day. I was thinking about that this morning when I came in and looked before this year. And that's a nechama as well. It's hard for all of us, I'm sure, especially Maya and Oren, to believe that it's been a year. It seems almost impossible. I just wanted to open with a thought about that before we get into the shiur, and with appreciation to Maya and Oren for sponsoring for us. We read Parshat HaChodesh on this past Shabbat, and we know that Parshat HaChodesh begins with the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, which is communicated to Moshe and Aharon. And in this case, Moshe and Aharon stand in the mind's eye of Chazal, for all of the Batei Din that would exist throughout Jewish history. In fact, there's a very famous Mishnah where there's a dispute between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua about when the proper time for Kiddush HaChodesh would be in one particular month. And Rabbi Akiva comes to his Rabbi, Rabbi Yoshua, and he says, more or less, basically, of course, I think you're right, but the problem is that the way that the halachic system works is that we're not going to follow Rabbi Gamliel, who is the Nasi, who is the president of the Beit Din, who's the head of the Sanhedrin, then ultimately we wouldn't just have to not follow him in this one instance, but we would have to be our heir. We'd have to question every Beit Din going back to Moshe and Aaron. We'd have to question the entire chain of our Masorah. And so there are very few individuals in any generation who is learning, and their knowledge and their erudition allows them to be part of this chain. But Oren and Maya, you know, your father really was. He was part of that very rarefied tradition that stretches back to Moshe and Aaron, of course, and goes forward in every generation. But he even stood out as unique within that Masorah, because for somebody who was a Rosh Hashiva, I think as everybody in this room knows, so I don't need to go into such detail, but he was a polymath. He was an expert in so many different areas of life, ranging, of course, from classical Jewish learning into broader academic Jewish studies, to finance and economics. And I even have, believe it or not, some congregants today who, of course, remember your father from the Jewish Center days going back half a century, actually a little bit more, before you guys came along, who will attest to that and still remember that very fondly. So he has a very special place in our hearts and in our memories as a community, and especially for the family. So his neshama should have an aliyah. And as I mentioned before, in the context of Jordan, as we're now in a time of Vihigad to Levincha, of communicating messages to next generations, it's our bracha to you that both of you and really all of your siblings will be able to share your father's values and the memories of your father and what made your father so special with future generations of the family, born and still as yet unborn. Ve'odatan levanecha of livnei vanecha, that should be something that you both merit. Returning to this notion of Parshat HaChodesh and Moshe and Aaron, so I wanted to just reflect a little bit on a very famous Rashi. Rashi, actually not in this section of the Torah, but way back in Sefer Bereishit, wants to know, why didn't the Torah just begin with HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem? Why do we need all of the 50 chapters of Sefer Bereishit and the first 11 chapters of Sefer Shemot? Why couldn't we just have started with HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem? So the question in this case is, what kind of question is that? There's a lot of important things in Sefer Bereishit. So the way that my teacher, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal, explained the question was the following. Right? The question was, you know, if the Torah is meant primarily to be a book about how we're supposed to live our lives, about halacha, about Jewish law, so it is true that there's very little by way of instruction in Sefer Bereishit. We only have three mitzvot, We have the mitzvah of Pru Revuv, which is in Parshat Breshid. We have the mitzvah of Brit Milah, which is in Parshat Lech Lecha, and gets repeated what we just read this past Shabbat from the first of the three Sifrei Torah we read, Tazria. So there we have a review of the mitzvah of Milah, Vayom HaShmini Mol Besar Ulato. And in Parshat Vayishlach, we have the third mitzvah, which is the mitzvah of Gid Hanasha. After, remember, Yaakov gets into a very strange encounter with an ish. The rabbis say that it was an angel. Okay, and he's injured, so that's the third mitzvah. And then we don't have any other mitzvot until the section of Achodesh Hazeh Lachem. So we have Mr. Vehedi here, some other representatives of people, in the spirit of the polymath who we remember today. So a little bit of quantitative analysis. So there are all of three mitzvot in the first 61 chapters of the Torah, and then in the 12th chapter of the Torah, there are an additional 20 mitzvot. You put together chapters 12 and 13. So basically, the way that Rav Lichtenstein explained the question is, why not just start with a mitzvot? And then you would have gotten in Peru Revu and Brit Milah, and Yid Hanasha could have come up later. So that's one way to understand the question. And then the answer, anybody happen to remember, by the way, the answer that Rashi gives in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak, why do we have Sefer Breshit in the end? What's it there for? So Rashi answers. Oh yeah, go ahead, Elisa.
No,
okay, I saw something percolating. Okay. False positive.
I'll tell you what I'm thinking. But I'm
Go ahead.
Is that one of the first Rashi?
No, that to show that the earth was created for Bnei Israel and for.
Very good. So that's exactly
okay, so
right.
Then
so Hashem says the world was created by. Yeah, right. So very good. So Rashi says, you needed Sefer Breshit because you had to establish that Hashem created the world, and if Hashem created the world, he can determine that the land of Israel, that Eretz Yisrael, should go to the Jewish people. And Rashi famously quotes a pasuk in Tehillim, Koach Masav Higid Le'amo, Latet Lahem Nachalat Goyim, to give them this particular Nachala, the land of Israel. So, with all of my reverence for my teacher Rav Lichtenstein, a lot of reverence for Rav Lichtenstein. The problem with the way that he presents it is that the question and the answer don't really line up. So the question is, why didn't we begin with all of the halacha? And so the answer is, because we had to know the land of Israel belonged to the Jewish people, there's kind of a non sequitur there. How does that relate to the question, if the question really about is, why didn't we start with the halachic sections of the Torah? So I'd like to suggest a different approach to how we can understand Rashi. What was Rashi's question about? Hopefully that will then start us on our journey over the next 10 to 15 minutes. So I would rather interpret Rashi's question the following way. Why don't we begin with HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, which is really the beginning of the story of the Jewish nation? You can say, like, when was the Jewish nation actually formed? And there's no real correct answer. You could say maybe Har Sinai, maybe Kriyat Yamsuf. But I would actually say in this section, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Rosh Chodashim, we were actually given our own calendar, our own system of time. We know that there are four different Rosh Hashanah. So there's a universal Rosh Hashanah, which is the creation of the world, Hayom Harat Olam, which is, of course, the first of Tishrei. And on the first of Tishrei, all the nations are judged. Kol Ba'ei Olam Ovrim Lefanav Kivnei Maron. So that is a universal day. But there's a particular day. The nations of the world have nothing to do with Nisan. So the question really was, in my judgment, that Rabbi Yitzchak was asking is, why didn't we just start the Torah with the beginning of the history of the Jewish nation? Okay, and now I think the answer makes, I say it with modesty, because I'm arguing here with Rav Lichtenstein, but now I think the answer makes a lot more sense. The answer is because you can't understand the history of the Jewish people if you don't understand the centrality of the land of Israel. Koach Masav. That there's no way to understand the Jewish people, the Jewish nation, without understanding the central role that the land of Israel plays to the Jewish nation. And that really is the answer. You couldn't have started with HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem because you can't really meet the Jewish people in Egypt. You have to understand that the Jewish people are actually always designed to come back to the land of Israel. That was true then, and that was true now. I'll tell you something parenthetically before carrying the ball forward a little bit further. So we know that all of this, to speak about one of the great images of Sefer Breshit, we have in the 15th chapter where Avram is told, Yadoa teda ki geri yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem vavadum vinu otam arba meot shana v'dor revi yeshuvu heinu, the brit ben hamtarim. When Avram is told, the terrible image that the Jewish people will be exiled into a land that's not theirs, they'll be oppressed in that land, and then eventually they're going to come back to the land of Israel. So during that whole scene, Avram is told to take various animals, 9 animals, 3 rams, 3 goats, 3 cows, vitor vigozal, and also birds. So everybody is pretty much in agreement that the birds represent the Jewish people. Vitor vigozal. And so Avram is, then he slices the animals, and it says, ve'etatzipur lo batar, that he didn't cut the birds. So there are various beautiful interpretations. Why didn't he cut the birds? So the Radak says, for example, that if the birds really represent the Jewish people, it means that the Jewish people will be geographically dispersed to the Arba Kontfot Haaretz, but will always be unified by one Torah and one Emunah. Okay, very beautiful idea. There's another idea which is quoted in the Midrash. Why are the Jewish people compared to the birds? It says there's something very interesting about the 2 species of birds that are used for Korbanot, which is that the tor, the pigeon, and the ben yonah, which in this case was the gozal that was being referenced, is that this is actually unique in the animal kingdom, but certainly amongst birds, that if the male dies, the female does not seek out another mate. What happens is that she basically says, okay, I'm retired from that part of life, and she goes on doing whatever she's doing, but she's always loyal. And so the metaphor is the Jewish people, even when we go through our periods of exile, we never trade in Hashem for a different God. We always stay loyal. That's another very classical idea. So one of my students pointed out to me this week, Yosef Krisman pointed this out, that these are the only 2 species of birds, I didn't know this before, that have an internal homing device. That the tor and the ben yonah are the only birds that if you take them, let's say you take them into temporary captivity, and you blindfold them, and then you put them, let's say, 40 kilometers away from their nest, they know how to get back. And actually, we did some research into how they know how to get back home. But it actually works through the sense of smell, believe it or not. Okay, that's an amazing thing. They're able to calibrate their sense of smell, and based on Earth's electromagnetic field, they actually can find their way back. So I was astonished by this. I said, that's unbelievable. Because then the metaphor gets even deeper, because what it really means is that the Jewish people, this is the context of the Brit Bein HaBetarim, right? Yadoa teda ki ger yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem v'dor revi'i yashuvu heina. The Jewish people, wherever they're dispersed to, they'll always know how to find their way back to the land of Israel. So I thought that was really an extraordinary manifestation of this idea. Okay, so speaking of the centrality of the land of Israel to Jewish peoplehood, so we all experienced this week something that I'm sure none of us will ever forget, something which is really unprecedented in the annals of Am Yisrael, which is we all grew up, of course, saying the name Zachariah Shlomo ben Miriam Baumel. Okay, so we all know the name. I feel very personal connection to Zachariah Baumel. He was, as everybody knows, they read the articles by now. Of course, he was American. He was born in Brooklyn. He went to the same yeshiva day school as my father, Yeshiva Yitzchayim Borough Park. It's now asphalt. It was turned into a parking lot, but in its day, it was a very nice school. My father has very fond memories of Zachary Baumel. Then they both went to study in Yeshivat Har Etzion, so where my brothers and I also studied. So I think that when I learned what the meaning of the phrase Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh was not in America. It's very hard to get that sense in America, truthfully. But when I went to Israel, so I remember I called my father and I said, it's amazing. At the time, it had been 20 years exactly since Zachary Baumel. He left the Beit Midrash on a Sunday, June 6, 1982. You don't get to go home when the army says you have to go. So he went straight from the Beit Midrash to the northern border. He went to war, and Tzareinu, he didn't come back for 37 years. It's a terrible battle, Sultan Yaqub, and he went missing along with Yehuda Katz and Tzvika Feldman. We should continue to daven, of course, for their return. So in any event, it had been 20 years exactly since he was last in the Beit Midrash. And I said to my father, I said, it's amazing. The way that all the Rosh Yeshiva and the Ram, everybody treats it as a Petza Patuach. It's like an open wound. It's like it happened last week. It says, that was amazing to me that people could be so sensitive and so compassionate. And that sense actually only grew throughout the entire year. And everybody who was learning in yeshiva, even though we hadn't even been born at that stage when Zechariah Baumel had been taken captive, so we all felt this is a brother of ours, right? That we're all learning from the same Rebbeim, so we have a concept of Vishinanta Levanecha Ilu Talmidecha, so if the Rebbe is the father, so then all the Talmidim are like brothers. So we all felt that it's an amazing thing about Zechariah Baumel. So I just wanted to highlight in two aspects of Zechariah's recovery that I think are very meaningful. We're talking about why we need Sefer Bereshit. It tells us a lot about the Jewish nation. So the Ramban, in our yeshiva, we're learning Sefer Bereshit this year with the students. The Ramban always makes reference to a concept of Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim. And he has a unique interpretation of that. And he says it's not just that we're supposed to emulate what our ancestors did, but the Ramban has a much more intensive version of that concept, where he says what it is that the forefathers, what the ancestors, what the matriarchs and the patriarchs, what the avod and the imod did, automatically has resonance for our lives today. Okay, I thought of that concept a lot last week. We know that the reason that, of course, we davened so much, the State of Israel took amazing risks and investments to bring the soldiers home, is because we have an ethic called Pidyon Shvuyim, that this is something that's the most basic aspect of our national consciousness, is that we don't leave people behind twice. The Rambam uses the expression, Ein lecha mitzvah rabah, Pidyon Shvuyim, that there's no mitzvah as important as Pidyon Shvuyim, and Kol HaKavod L'Tzal, that the Jewish army behaves that way. This is the way that we behave, and the Jewish army behaves this way in a way that transcends any other military force in the world. So Pidyon Shvuyim is very, very significant. And Pidyon Shvuyim, of course, goes back to Avraham Avinu. The first instance that we have in the Torah, the one that's definitional to Pidyon Shvuyim, is when Avram goes to rescue his nephew Lot. Remember, Lot is taken captive from Sodom, and Avram risks his life to bring Lot back. It's a remarkable story because, remember, in the previous chapter, Lot abandoned Avraham Avinu. Avram adopted Lot, remember, when Haran, his father, died. And because he thought he could make more money, so he left Avram behind and he went to Sodom. Ki chula mashke lifnei shachet Hashem et areh hakikar. So it seemed like a good business proposition. Didn't turn out so well, but he thought it was a good idea. But just because Lot abandoned Avraham, he was never going to abandon Lot. And it says vayirdof adan, that he risked his life. He took 318 soldiers and he went to war against four very powerful kings. Now listen to this. The Torah says, "Vayechalek alehem laila huvavada vayakem," that Avram marches through the middle of the night and he goes to war against the four kings. "Vayirdefem ad chova," and he chases them to a place called Chova, asher mismol Damasek. That how far was he willing to go to bring back the first example of Pidyon Shvuyim to the outskirts of Damascus? V'kachava masevo siman lebanim. But it's not only that. The Gemara in Masechet Sotan, Daf Yud Zayin, tells us that because Avram went so far for Lot, not because he stood to gain anything from it. Remember, afterwards, he's offered a lot of money, where the king of Sodom says, you keep all of the rechush. He could have been a billionaire. So Avram says, Im michut v'ad srochnal v'imekach mikol asher lach. I'm not interested in the money. Okay, the reason I did this is because I have a loyalty. And the Gemara says, because Avram rejected all of that, all of the money, he wasn't going to, in some sense, compromise the quality of the mitzvah that he did just for whatever the money that the king of Sodom was going to offer him, Zachu banav lishtei mitzvot, the Gemara says, that we merited two mitzvot. I'll talk about one of them. Im michut v'ad srochnal. What mitzvah did we get because of the chut? We got the mitzvah of tzitzit. So Zachu banav l'mitzvah tzitzit. So what do we know? We all know this by now. But before they did the Israeli forensic lab is someplace called Abu Kabir outside of Tel Aviv. So that's where they did the final analysis. But the reason that they thought they had a very, very good chance that this being either Zechariah Baumel or Tzvika Feldman was in the field when the Israeli special forces went in, what did they see? They saw his tzitzit. So Zachu banav lishtei mitzvot, because of what Avram did on the outskirts of Damascus, how did they find him? They found him with the mitzvah of tzitzit. Maaseh avot siman lebanim. that it continues to resonate for us so many generations, centuries and millennia later, almost 4,000 years later, 3,800 years after those events between Avram and Lot. So they continue to resonate. It's very meaningful for us. It's true that there are countries in the world. The United States, just as part of our negotiations with North Korea, we repatriated those soldiers who were killed in the Korean War. But once they came home, did they get a hesped from the head of state, from the head of government, from the head of the army? Who was masped Zacharia Baumel, the Rosh Memshala, the Nasi Hamdina, the Ramatkal? The entire country stopped 5 days before elections because v'shavu banim ligvulam. Mikam Chai Yisrael, there's no nation in the world that's like this, because we understand the significance of the land of Israel to the Jewish people. And it has to be that we will bring back every one of the banim. And as Osnat said, his sister, she said it so beautifully. She said, it's only fitting, right? Because the ben who gave everything for the land, and now the land can reciprocate finally, and l'chabek et haben, l'mluchot olamim, that can... Where the sun will now be for eternal rest, which is, I think, says everything about the what she called the ichud gamur, the total unity between the Jewish people and the land of Israel. So coming back to where we started, HaChodesh Hazeh Lacham Rosh Chodeshim. Rashi asks, why couldn't the Torah have started here? This is the beginning of our history as a people. We have our own set of time. We don't just count by the same time that all of the Umot HaOlam count. So why not just start the Torah as a story of the Jewish people? So start the Torah here. The answer is because you can't understand the Jewish people without understanding the relationship between Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. Koach Masa v'gid l'amo l'teid lahem nachalat goyim. And just last week we saw another chapter in that story of the eternal connection between the Jewish people and the land of Israel. That there's a special connection between Am Yisrael kulo, but also between each individual member of the Jewish people and the land of Israel. Sos tasis v'tagel ha'akara b'kibbutz banel etocha b'simcha, that we all experience that sense of the Jewish people and the land of Israel welcoming back one of the banim who gave everything for the land of Israel. And because it was Zechariah, so I guess we'll conclude with one of my favorite psukim, known to all of us from the Navi Zechariah, of Elo v'chayel v'lo v'choach ki'im beruchi, that this was not in the end a story about military might, and it was not a story about arms, but ki'im beruchi was a story about persistence, that Am Yisrael never forgot, after 37 years, that we owe the Baumel family responsibility, we owe Zechariah responsibility, we owe every chayel a responsibility to do everything in our power to bring them home. Ki'im beruchi amar Hashem tzvakot, and the ruach, the spirit of the Jewish people, to persist is something that I think we can all take an enormous amount of pride in as we look forward to Chag HaPesach. And we say, of course, b'nisan nigalu, b'nisan atidim ligael, it's a time of redemption. If it happened for Zechariah, we have to see that there's an opportunity now for Yehuda Katz and Tzvika Feldman and Lehavdil, of course, the bodies of Oron Shaul and Hadar Golden, to bring everybody back. So hopefully it will be v'shavu banim ligvulam. So again, Maya and Oron, thank you so much for sponsoring in memory of your father, whose neshama should have an aliyah. He said, should be able to transmit v'gata levincha. You should be able to transmit all the things that made him so unique and so special to future generations as we head into Chag HaPesach.